Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hello, Smart Money Tree Podcast listeners. Welcome to this week's show. My name is Kirk Chisholm. I'll be your host. And today I'm joined with my good friend, Doug Hagren. Hey, Doug.
Good morning, Kirk. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, you too. You too. We also have another special guest. We have Kelly, the tax leprechaun, who's here to give us some tax tips for the tax season here. So how are you doing, Kelly?
Peace in, Doug. And Kirk, how you doing?
We're doing good. Well, we wanted to bring Kelly in the show because it is officially tax season, and I think we can all kind of run for the hills. And
I
know pretty much for the next month and change, we're all going to be struggling to get our taxes on time. So Kelly, why don't you give us your tax tip for the week, and maybe we can get to know you a little better.
Well, the first tax tip I'm going to give you, it's a really complicated one, and it's going to take a lot of time to explain it. You got to be a tax genius to articulate this one. So are you two ready? You think your audience can handle it?
They're pretty smart, Kelly. I'm sure they can handle it.
I'm a little intimidated, Kelly, but I think I'll get through this.
Doug, with all those cool charts back there, I think you should be able to handle this one. I'm not sure.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. That wasn't finger up, was it? Was that crossed?
That's the blur session. There's my fingers crossed.
There it is. Okay. Here's the tax tip, boys. Are you ready? Don't file your taxes too early.
Interesting.
Why is that, Kelly?
Now, why is that?
I'm glad you asked. I'm dead serious. I'm not trying to be over the top Irish humor here. Dead serious. Here's why. Especially your audience, Kirk. They got 1099 dividends. They got capital gains. They got RSUs. They got a lot of stuff going on frequently. If you're W-2, go ahead and file. But frequently, taxpayers with a lot of stuff going on, they don't get all their tax documents. And if they rush to file, half the taxpayers in your audience are kind of like, okay, I'm going to file an extension, then I'm going to file ultimately October 15th. That's half. The other half, everybody wants to be timely. So they kind of get it out there early. Some people just want to get it out of the way. And then what happens is they have to amend their return, or they don't amend it. They missed a dividend. They missed the capital gains. You know, if you've got stock options, there might be an amended return, an adjusted tax document sent out. And it's better just to hang out. Let it happen. You got plenty of time. Don't rush in there. Because the worst thing you can do, frankly, is not report some income that you got. Because IRS matches. That's real easy. They just match it up and send you a letter. Bam. And then it's a pain to have to deal with. Just be patient. Wait till you get all your documents. You'll see things that you never thought. Like, oh man, I'm glad I didn't file that. Oh, I opened that account there. That kind of thing. Hang out. Don't file too early.
Kelly, I got to say, I appreciate that. And I can't tell you the number of people that I've worked with or talked to every year that we're not even to the mid-January. And they're just like, where's my tax documents? I need to file. You know, we got to get the file. Like trying to get this stuff to my CPA. You know, and half the time it's for clients like you're talking about. This isn't even 1099, you know, retirement distributions. We're talking about taxable accounts, which most of the time brokerages, they have a due date to prepare that by the end of February. So it's not even done by January 15th. And a lot of times, depending on the investments, you'll see that they'll say, look, we got an IRS approval to extend this 1099. We'll put out a rough draft of it by February, but they'll have a permission to extend and you won't get the actual final 1099 till March, April. And people freak out. It's like, well, I got to file by April 15th. Listen, no, you don't.
Yeah.
I have filed an extension personally since I was 22 years old. It's easy. File the extension.
Get them stuff like now.
And Kelly, you know this. You can probably expand on this. People will say yes, but you have to pay the tax by April if you owed any taxes. The funny thing I've learned about the IRS, maybe you could explain on this humor. They care more about you filing than they do about you paying. There was a situation one year where the penalty on not filing on time can be like a 50% penalty, I think, or something like that for not filing for the amount you would have been due. But as long as you file on time and tell them what you're going to pay, there was a year situation, a client didn't pay their tax and they owed probably about $10,000, $15,000. They didn't pay that tax until they got a notice February the following year. And I think total penalties and interest on it was like $800. Please tell us what you're going to pay us. Pay us whenever you want. Now tell me if that doesn't tell us we have a broken revenue system for the United States.
they've remedied some of that, but you know, since you mentioned the broken revenue system and you know all the complaints about the IRS and 10,000 agents or 80,000 agents, whatever that thing was, here's what I tell people is that for taxpayers that are getting refunds, they want a real efficient IRS. And that's a certain class of demographic of people typically make less than, you know, $35,000, child tax credits, that kind of thing. They want an efficient IRS. The rest of us, we want a really inefficient IRS. We want an IRS that isn't real good at collecting or following up because, you know, that's like the efficient government Gestapo type state. We don't really want that. We're okay with them being inefficient, I think.
Well, the IRS has a lot more things on their list on how to avoid taxes than they do on telling you what to pay. That doesn't tell you the system.
That's my brilliant tip, Kirk. Is that something you can handle, you think? You're going to follow that?
I think so. Well, Kelly, I've never filed on time, so if that gives you any reference.
Filing an extension is still filing on time.
Well, that's fair.
You file on time.
You know, it's funny. I just got off the phone with an accountant, and we were having this very same conversation about, you know, people who are freaking out because they need to get everything in by April 15th and not realizing that you can extend, not realizing you can amend your return. People think that it's like a final draft. They don't even realize you can amend. It's like people freak out about this, which frankly is how the IRS gets people to pay. They don't have enough agents to get people to pay, so they scare the crap out of everybody. And they do like an IRS raid like once a year. So it hits the headlines. So they scare the pants off people. So they pay. Because otherwise, no one would pay. What do they have? Like a 92% or 96% somewhere in that ratio of people pay. And there's this small segment of people that will never pay. And they know that. And they know they'll never get 100%. But that scare tactic will get like that extra 10% from 85 to 95. So they do it. And that's how they get better compliance. So who wants to go to tax jail? I don't.
Well, we do a lot of work on that area, on the tax debt, tax resolution area. It used to be that deadbeats and don't pay their taxes, but it's a lot of self-employed people that struggle. A lot of people are on W-2 paychecks. It's a pay-as-you-go system. You're never going to get in too big a trouble with a W-2 unless you have a big capital gains. Where I see people having trouble in kind of your market, the investment market, is they have a big capital gain and then they reinvest that gain and they do other things with it and they lose it. They lose that money and then they can't afford to pay their taxes. Tip number two for your guys, if you make money, reserve some for taxes before you go reinvest it and potentially lose that and not have the money to pay your taxes. But we'll save that tip for another day.
Kelly, I appreciate your insight. You're welcome to stick around. We're going to be talking about inflation, deflation, and all the fun stuff of the world. So I don't know if you want to stick around. You got a place to be.
I got to take off. I got a bunch of tax stuff to get done. So I appreciate you inviting me here, and I'm happy to come back whenever you want me.
I'd love to have you back on every week just for, you know, a good 10 minutes just to see what's going on in the tax world. I know people have to deal with this. Okay. And if nothing else, maybe you can teach our listeners a thing or two. So thanks.
Happy to do it. Unless your audience says, don't bring him back. Leave him out.
I think if you bring a pot of gold, Kelly, I think you'll get him back. So.
All right. Cheers, boys. Peace out.
All right. See you later, Kelly. Well, that was good. I think that was a good tip. And as we kind of get into tax season, we'll bring Kelly on. We've been getting a ton of questions about taxes. I know taxes is the most boring topic we can imagine. If we really wanted to turn listeners off, I think everyone's turned off their earphones by now, Doug, but we're going to do our best.
He kept it short and sweet enough that it probably kept him around. But you start getting into those taxes things, I'm about to turn myself off, especially when I start looking at what they're trying to change where I live.
Anyone who wants to get tax advice, Kelly's, he's one of the people I lean on for when I have questions. So we'll have him back on. So let's dive right in. The headline today was about deflation. Now, I want to start this off because you're probably listening to this thinking, this guy has lost his mind. He's talking about deflation. We're worried about inflation. The Fed's raising rates. What is this guy talking about? Let me explain. No one's been worried about inflation until about last year. Even though we had high inflation in 2021, about mid-year, people didn't worry about it because they thought, oh, it's transient, right, Doug? Remember that? It was transient and it's going to go away. So it's no longer transient, unless you think transient's like 10 years. Maybe that's transient. But we all have this mental model of how things work. And that mental model is actually derived from the news and from people who are creating narratives for us. And we think that's the truth. Well, that's not the truth. That's a narrative. There's a difference between truth and narrative, and most of us don't know the difference. Now, I don't mean to demean the listeners of the audience, because we all do it. It's human nature. I do it every day, right? You hear something and you're like, oh, it must be true. But we don't know if it's true. We're just accepting it as true, right? The teacher told you something. Oh, it must be true. A professor told me. My boss told me. My wife told me. Whatever. People tell you things all the time and you assume it's true. But it's not true. It's a narrative or it's a perspective. So if my kids tell me something, I get one perspective. I talk to my wife, I get another perspective. I talk to the kid's teacher, I get an even another perspective. So there's all these different perspectives and we try to create what we think is true based on those perspectives. Now, we might weight some perspectives more than others. We might weight the Federal Reserve Chair's opinion more than some anchor on a news show who doesn't even know the first thing about economics. We might weight that more, but should we? I don't know. It depends. Is the Federal Reserve trying to create a narrative or are they trying to tell the truth? Well, I would say 99% of the time, they're creating a narrative. It might also be true. I'm not saying they're lying. I want to be very clear about this because people get confused on where I'm going. Creating a narrative is not necessarily about lying. You could create a narrative and it could be 100% true. But the idea is to create a narrative because you're trying to tell a story and you're trying to basically influence people in a certain direction. Now, I think the Federal Reserve has been very clear in the past 12 months about their direction. We have inflation and we want to destroy demand. They don't say we want to send us into a recession. They don't say we're trying to beat inflation, although they have said that a little bit. What they say is we're trying to destroy demand, which means they're trying to send us into recession. Destroying demand effectively will bring down inflation. That is what they're trying to do. They've been very clear and their intentions have been clear. They're going to keep raising rates as long as they have to destroy demand. Well, they haven't done that so far. And we've seen that in the statistics. And I'll let Doug get into that a little bit. But the point is creating that narrative is one of their main jobs. Now, they've been talking about how we have to beat inflation, we have to beat inflation. But the reason we wanted to bring up deflation is twofold. One is that we can have inflation and deflation at the same time, which would probably swirl your brain around a little bit. Conceptually, that doesn't make sense. How can we have both at the same time? I'll get into that in a little bit. But I also want to point out that getting inflation right now and getting deflation later are two totally separate things. Right now, we have 6.5% inflation. And for reference, because I know a lot of our listeners don't believe the CPI, I'm not even going to get into that. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. It's irrelevant. But the fact is the CPI is dropping. And that's all we have to go on. We can come up with numbers. We can make up our own numbers. We can use shadow stats. I'm not discounting any of that. But we have to use some number. So we're going to use this number for the sake of example. The CPI went up to 9.1. Now it's at 6.5. That's a big drop. And you could argue, well, things are still going up in the store. My avocados are up 20%. My eggs are up 300%. Yeah, but we don't live off eggs alone.
How much is your toilet paper now, Kurt?
I don't know, but it's going to be really expensive to toilet paper my neighbor's house. So I'm going to hold off until things get cheaper, Doug. So if you're wondering why no one's TPing your house, that's the reason.
And if we want to really go back on our conversations, how much is heroin? We've got to bring it up now. Got to bring it up now and then, since that's come up in the past in our conversations randomly. So
thanks, Doug. You're taking it dark on a Friday. Thanks, Doug.
It's the only day to take it there.
All right. So going down this path. So the deflation comment, we can have inflation, deflation at the same time. But I would argue that we could possibly have deflation by the end of the year. Now, I want to hit on a few terms because you probably get a little confused. Inflation is when we have positive inflation. We actually don't call it anything else other than rising inflation, or people refer to it inflation if it's increasing, oddly enough. But when we have inflation and it's declining, they call that disinflation. So it's weird they have a term for that, but not rising inflation. So they have disinflation when inflation is dropping, but still positive. And then we have deflation when it's negative. So right now, we have disinflation when inflation is dropping. What I'm predicting is deflation by the end of the year. You might say, well, how's that possible? How can we go from inflation to deflation in such a short period of time? Well, I'm going to tell you. Here's an example of why we could have deflation by the end of the year. I'm not saying we will. I'm saying it's possible. And you have to keep this in mind because it will change the way you look at the markets, which is exactly why I'm bringing it up. Here's the thing. Here's the composition of the CPI in the US. Housing, 42.1% of the CPI is made up of housing. 17.4% is transportation or energy. Food and beverages, 15%. I have no idea how that makes up 15% of the CPI, but we're going to go with it. Medical care, 7.3%. Recreation, 6.1%. Other goods and services, 4.5%. Apparel, 3.3%. Education, communication, 3.2%. Education, I don't know how that makes up 3.2%. Anyway, point being is 42% of it is made up of housing. Transportation or energy, 17%. That's a total of approximately 60%. And then if you include some other things in there, well, college is always high, but let's just say it's close to 2/3 of the CPI is made up of housing and energy prices. And then there's a little bit extra in there, which is always high. So you might think, well, crap, that's really high. Housing is through the roof and transportation, energy prices are really high. Yeah, but are they increasing? No, they're not. Housing is dropping. And we're going to share that in a little bit in the show. Housing is dropping. Energy prices are dropping. You might think, well, we got all these problems with energy. They should be going through the roof. Yes, they will, but not necessarily in the short term. They're going down. And then you have everything else. So right now we have 2/3 of the CPI that is dropping. That would allude to the fact we would have a negative inflation rate or deflation. Highly possible. The prediction this year that we read last week, 10 to 20% drop in housing. Well, if you have close to half of the CPI is going to go down 10 to 20%, the rest of it has to be really high to offset that. Now, this has almost nothing to do with you if you're not moving. But my point is you have to keep in mind that everybody bases their information on the CPI. The CPI is heavily weighted in housing and transportation. So if you're not looking at those two, then you're missing the boat as where inflation could go. And I'm going to bring up one more point. I'm going to hand it off to Doug because I don't want to monopolize the whole thing. January, the first month of the CPI being released this year, which hasn't come out yet, it comes out next time, is going to be a brand new calculation on the CPI. So prior to this, the calculation of the CPI was, I think it was a 24-month rolling period, I think is how they calculated it. Now it's 12 months. So all the things that happened 2 years ago, totally irrelevant, doesn't matter. What's relevant? The last 12 months. Well, what happened in the last 12 months? Inflation went up, and then July, it started to fall. Okay. Look at January, January. I'm going to try to visually put this. So let's say you've got January, January. Right now, you've got on 2022, it going up until July. 2023, it's dropping. So now we have a higher point and a lower point. What is that? Deflation. So I'm trying to explain this. I know the listeners are probably going to get confused. The point is when you have last year going up and this year going down, that means you're going to have a negative number. I don't know if this is going to have a negative number. I don't trust the CPI. I think a lot of it's managed. It's irrelevant. The point is you have a lot of factors coming into play that could push the CPI negative this year, even though we have high inflation. We could have 15, 20% inflation at the store. Your food costs, your energy costs could be up a lot. You could still have a negative number for all of the reasons that I'm talking about, because they recalculated the CPI, so totally different numbers. So the new number could be completely different. Like I said, it's probably managed, but let's leave that aside. You have that happening. You have negative in the biggest factors in the CPI. Then we have some other factors, which I'm going to point to, which is, I'm going to mention briefly and give it off to Doug, is you can have inflation and deflation at the same time. If you look back at, for example, back, and I'm going to share the screen here for really quickly for those of you who are watching live on YouTube, because LinkedIn was broken this week, so I can only use YouTube. Basically, people think money printing equals inflation. Well, during COVID, that didn't exactly happen. Food at work, shoes, city transport, airfare, hotels, all were deflationary during COVID. But at the same time, you had bicycles, cable television, food at home, cleaning products, all were inflationary during COVID. So you had both at the same time. Now, what was the factor? Well, it didn't hit right away. It hit 2021. We saw a huge spike in inflation. But the point is you can have both. It's an aggregation of all these different products and services together will equal that CPI. But what I'm trying to point out is that not all factors are equal. So if you put them all together and you look at housing being highly deflationary and everything else being, just say, flat or maybe inflationary, we could have a negative number. So keep that in mind. I'm pointing this out not to predict we're going to have negative inflation, although it's probable that we could get to that point. But just keep that in mind, because if you think that it could never happen here, it very well could. And that means the Fed's going to drop rates through the floor because they do not want deflation to take hold. That is not worse than hyperinflation, but it's a very close second. They do not want deflation to take hold in the US, and it's possible that could happen because we have the bullwhip effect. So Doug, I've just monopolized the first 20 minutes, so let's get your thoughts on this.
I'll start with the most recent thing first. I mean, you're talking about you can have both inflation and deflation at the same time, and that's always been the case. If we go back several years ago, and I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but if we were to take a look at what the cost, what overall inflation was, and let's just say at that point in time, it was, they were estimating inflation to be plus or minus 3%. At that point, it might've been 2.5%. And everybody's telling us, hey, there's no inflation right now, or very limited, reasonable inflation. Well, that just depends on what you're trying to buy. So what was really going into that number? Well, you mentioned college, right? So if you're trying to go to college, was that 3% or 2.5% inflation? Absolutely not. I mean, we're looking at an average of 4 to 6% inflation on private schools. We're looking at an average of 6 to 8% plus inflation on public schools because they've relied historically on more tax revenue, and that tax revenue has been diminishing. So they've got to make that up somewhere by charging higher increases. How about food? I mean, food has been increasing at egregiously expensive rates for years. I mean, we talk about how expensive eggs are right now. That's kind of the running meme joke, is looking at eggs. And I actually saw a video, which is pretty funny. It's got, you know, the 90s hip hop tune playing in the background. The guy goes to his fridge. He's making a recipe. He opens it up and there's a gun safe in his fridge. Opens up the safe, pulls out the eggs on the bottom shelf. Top shelf's got two Glocks. I mean, right? That's how people are thinking about eggs. They've always been more expensive. Matter of fact, go back and take a look at the price of a Big Mac in 1990 compared to the price of a Big Mac now. It has outpaced inflation multitudes. Again, I don't have the number in front of me, but that's probably, at the last I looked, it was closer to 6 to 10% inflation there. And then, of course, you go back to 2021 and you look at the price spike on housing and what that did to drive that cost up. But now let's go back and take a look at other things like televisions. Technology, for example, the price of technology has gone down significantly. Remember the 1980s, what it would cost out of a family's budget to add a television to the house? I mean, back then, a television was a piece of furniture. I mean, it was cased in wood. It had bookshelves, all this nice stuff. It was a part of your decor. Now we buy them and throw them out as scrap faster than it takes to figure out how to buy the first one you're buying. I mean, you could buy a 50-inch television now for $300. Before this recent inflation spike, it was actually less than that. What's driving the price of them up a little bit? You talked about it, bullwhip effect. Another thing, you know, that I was looking at here in terms of recent history and the bullwhip effect is cars. Well, let me finish my thought on that, Kirk, because we're kind of going all over the place. If you were to take that 2.5% inflation that people were talking about back 2, 3, 5 years ago, and you were to actually ask someone if they felt like inflation was 2.5% in their house, most people tell you no, because that list that I just mentioned for you of a couple things that went up versus a couple things went down, they offset each other. And how do they offset each other? They offset each other in the government's calculation, because look, if we have this going up by this and this going down by this, look, it only averaged to 2.5%. But a lot of what people need versus a lot of what people want are on the other side of the spectrum. Nobody needs a 50-inch TV. They want a 50-inch TV, but you can live without a 50-inch TV. You cannot live without food on your plate. Some people would argue you cannot live without college. You cannot live without certain things. And unfortunately, now you look at the budget and the inflation on what you're actually paying for. Some people would argue that inflation has been in the 10 to 12% in households for years, because you can only cut out so many things. And it's the things you can cut out, the discretionary goods, that have actually been deflationary to offset that. So that's where you have to really understand that CPI number and what it means to your budget. Now let's talk about where we are in terms of inflation, deflation. You know, I follow a lot in the world of just trying to look at housing and cars. We've talked a lot about housing. Listen, last year, used car pricing was starting to absolutely plummet. Carvana stock was in the toilet. Everything was looking like death for the entire auto industry. They have now gone up in price for 2 months in a row. The last time this happened was the peak of 2021. But why? What's happening there? It's bullwhip effect. It's not a seasonality. Back in January 2021, prices rose that month. But see, used cars were 25 to 40% less expensive than they are now. Rates were close to zero. It's not the same situation as we have today. So you're starting to see some real issues that are going on there, because a lot of these car companies, they actually purposefully reduced their inventory. Bullwhip effect. That bullwhip effect, it was leading to the ability to now have a squeeze on the price of this remaining used car. And we all of a sudden we have a demand. I think people are kind of sick of waiting. They want to take action. They want to get, you know, with these used car prices jumping as fast as they can since 2021, you're looking at pent up demand. You're looking at record highs, but we've still got financing record highs too. So with car shortages, and you got to remember, dealers are also looking at that tax season coming up, and they know what happens when people get that tax refund, Kirk. What do people like to do?
Right? Spend it.
A lot of people look at their tax refund as their savings plan for the year, which in itself is an astronomically problematic way to do your financial planning. But it's where a lot of America does it. So dealers have carried less supply over the last 90 days due to depreciation risk and holding costs. That's a self-induced car shortage. That's actually a stagflation effect, Kirk, because we've got the inflation is occurring, but it's based on a limited amount of supply. Now, I want to look at what you said. It's like we can go from inflationary to deflationary. I want to talk Ford for a second. Ford has been dealing with some really, really big issues. So the stock is in shambles. And then, by the way, I get a lot of this stuff from a gentleman that's in the industry. If you know, we'll look him up, you know, to give credit where it's due. At Car Dealership is his Twitter handle. But the Ford Company U.S. average transaction price for Q4 2022 actually was rising, but their sales is in absolute decline. The last time that their sales fell below 500,000 units in a quarter, you want to take a guess on that, Kirk?
I would say a few decades ago.
Well, a little short than that. 6 years ago. 6 years ago. So they only sold 479 units in Q4 2022. They're getting eaten up by other competition like Tesla. Recently, Tesla just cut their new cars by 20%, but Ford can't afford to do that. They've got really slim margins. So what are they doing? Usually what happens when a company's trying to sell something, they want to boost incentives for consumers. They're not. They're slashing the incentives by almost 56%. Their supply chain is a mess. They have deeply entrenched issues. Volume targets aren't where they are. Cost is too high. They just lost $2 billion last year. $2 billion. So guess what's going to happen? We get past tax season. We get past the refunds. And all of a sudden, people don't have the cash anymore because costs are going up everywhere else. We start to get to a situation where people aren't going to buy those luxury goods like cars. They're not going to have the money to do it. Interest rates are really high. So what we're still seeing is we're seeing that inflation that's being caused a lot of what we talked about before, the bullwhip effect. But we've talked about this before, Kirk. The problem with the bullwhip effect is you have to have some sort of inventory to keep consumer demand, right? This is where Procter & Gamble was looking at diapers. I can't remember if they're behind Love's or Pampers, one of them. But they were looking at this. This is how this started. This bullwhip effect started when they were looking at how many diapers to have available. How much supply should we keep on inventory? The auto dealers are dealing with this too. Extremely expensive to sit on inventory. But now we have another problem. That lack of inventory means that your consumers will start to no longer trust you as a brand. They're going to start going to your competitor. And that's what they're starting to see. So if you all of a sudden, these consumers, because of your lack of inventory or the cost of your goods, no longer trust you as their go-to source. And we're starting to see that. People are not buying the same car. Somebody that might buy a truck may now be going to buy a Prius. Well, once you've lost that customer to your competitor, it's very difficult to get them back. So this is where Ford's got to figure out how to keep enough cars out there to keep demand, because once that demand diminishes, all of a sudden now, not only do they have a short supply, they have a short demand. Kirk, just out of curiosity, when you think about pricing, if supply falls and demand's there, what does that do to pricing?
Up.
Up. If supply falls and demand falls, what does that do to pricing?
Comparatively, it'd be the same.
Yep. Now, if you get to a situation where supply fell, demand fell, and now you don't have, and you're losing money left and right, and you don't have the ability, or you have to try to prepare for your supply chain to meet this fall in demand, what do you then do to your supply? You reduce it.
I think the word is bankruptcy, Doug.
I think the word is bankruptcy. And in order to go out of bankruptcy, what do companies typically do?
Well, they file bankruptcy, they get rid of their debt, like the automakers have done, and then they liquidate a lot of their inventory at discounted prices.
Yep. And if you liquidate your inventory at discounted prices to do whatever you can to sell, welcome to deflation. All of a sudden, the cost of those goods. So now we're looking at Carvana in financial trouble. We're looking at Ford in financial trouble. Carvana stock, one of the hottest stocks of the year, by the way. Here we are getting into the world of stonks, meme stonks, and short squeezes again. What an amazing way to start the year to make money in completely worthless crap. But that's what's happening. It's not like Carvana's outlook has improved at all. They have an incredible amount of supply. But guess what Carvana started doing this month? Overpaying again for used cars so they could have supply to sell. When all of this starts to crack, if you look at a balance sheet, and I'm not just talking about a single company's balance sheet, but you look at an economic balance sheet, and all of these things start to lose stability, and you can't keep those plates spinning and spinning and spinning, we move into a potential for recession, and that's deflationary, because at that point, demand drops like a rock.
Hey, Doug, did you hear? We're giving away free money. Well, I'll tell you about it in a bit. There's a saying in the mining community, well, precious metals mining, that is. The saying is that if you want the best deals, you have to be in the room. Now, you're probably thinking, what does it mean to be in the room? Well, I'll tell you. Being in the room means that you're on the short list of people who get invited to be a part of the best deals. These are the deals that most investors will never have access to. You mean like IPOs? Nope. IPOs are chump change. Those are for retail investors, small potatoes. That's nothing compared to these deals. These deals would have you salivating to get access to them. Once you know they exist, you will never look at investing the same way again. I almost don't want to tell you they exist because it'll ruin your thinking of how the investing world really works. Now, you might be excited that these deals exist, but you only have access to the deals if you're an insider or in the room, as they call it. As loyal listeners of the show, I'm going to give you a chance to be in the room. Money Tree Investing Podcast has created the Insiders Club. This is a community of our show's members who are loyal listeners of the show and want to get more out of their investing experience. Being a part of the Insiders Club gives you insider status for upcoming events and private webinars, discounts, free stuff and books, and influence on the future direction of the show. This is an opportunity to join us as we expand our content and services. Oh, did I mention you're getting free money? Yes, in the next few weeks, I will be giving free money to members of the Insiders Club as my appreciation for listening to the show. There's no cost to join the Insiders Club. Just go to moneytreepodcast.com/free money. Do that today to join the community. That's moneytreepodcast.com/free money. I hope to see you in the room. We're probably confusing a lot of people, but I think we want to throw this out there so you all can understand this. You know, you can have a inflationary recession just as much as you can have a deflationary recession. So there's a lot of different levers that are moving around here. What confuses a lot of people is you think A equals B, B equals C. Like you just have this equation in your head, like this is how things work. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. Traditionally, things have worked a certain way in the last 40 years. We've been accustomed to it. We've taken it as a rule of thumb. We've made assumptions based on it. And when those assumptions turn out to be wrong, because things change, as they always do in the world, just our perspective has changed because we stopped being agile. So we talk a lot about financial resilience here. We haven't talked about it enough, I think, recently. But financial resilience, it's not about taking your cash and putting on the mattress and sitting on top of it with your guns and your gold and your MREs. That's not financial resilience. Sure, you can do that. Not going to knock it if that's what your flavor is. Financial resilience is not about money. It's not about risk management. It's about a mindset. It's about what's going on in your head. Resilience, just to be clear, a part of financial resilience is risk management. But I just want to be clear. Financial resilience and resilience itself is really a mindset. It's about how you can weather the storm in your head when times are bad. If you're thinking about, all right, there's going to be a recession in the next 2 years, how can I prepare myself? You're becoming resilient. You may not get through it unscathed. I mean, most people have a hard time in recessions. Like very few get out of it unscathed. But the point is if you're mentally prepared and you know times are going to be tough, I got to tighten my belt a little bit. I'm going to pay a little bit less. I'm going to buy my kids fewer stupid game coins. I'm going to buy myself fewer shoes. I'm not going to get that new car every year. Like, you're just going to change your habits to say, all right, we need to save. How can I save another 10 grand this year? All right, well, here's what I have to do. I have to do this, this, and this. So being resilient is about being mentally prepared for bad times. We haven't had that in a long time. So most people are not mentally prepared. They're accustomed to the Fed bailing us out with lower interest rates. Maybe they'll do that again this time. I don't know. But what I do know is I'm not planning on that, because to me, that scenario, while possible, is less probable. Now, I also want to get back to the narrative comment I made earlier, which is the narrative we're being fed right now is, hey, everything's fine. The economy's strong, employment's strong, everything's great. We have nothing to worry about. That's the narrative being pumped out by just about everybody. And logically, Doug and I have talked a lot about this, and certainly I've spent a lot of time thinking about the structure and the strategy behind what's going to happen, because I don't know what the future is, but I've planned multiple scenarios so that even if I'm wrong with the scenario I'm telling you as an audience, I have a backup plan. I know that if this happened, this is going to happen. This is why we came out a few months ago and said, it's time to start looking at bonds. I was getting hate mail left and right. What the hell are you talking about? Bonds? Bonds are crazy. They're going, interest rates are going up. You're going to lose money. And I said, yeah, but I didn't say buy bonds. I said, start looking at them. Meaning start changing your mental model that bonds are bad now, because yes, they were bad and they've been bad and rates are still going up as of we speak. But now's a great time to start looking. We've started adding bonds to our portfolios because you're getting 4.5% to 5% in bonds. Why wouldn't you look at that? Now, I know full well that it could be 7 or 8 in a few years. I'm okay with that because I'm not buying 10-year, 30-year bonds. I might be buying 1 or 2 year bonds. So if it goes up in 2 years, great. I'll buy more then at a better rate. But the point is, when you're thinking about how all of this is going to apply to your situation, deflation is a challenge because we haven't experienced it before. We don't know what it's like. We don't know how to act. We haven't looked at all of our assumptions. All of us look at that way. I've spent most of last year and a good part of year before thinking, not even coming up with strategies, just thinking about all the implications based on where we are and realizing that we're screwed in many ways. And it doesn't mean that the world's going to implode. It doesn't mean the U.S. is no longer going to be the reserve currency. I hear that all the time. And I think, well, that's a good narrative. I think it's bunk, because who's going to replace us? There's nothing to replace us. It's not going to be gold, because not enough people have gold. All the narratives sound good on the surface, but when you dig in, you realize that's not going to happen. Something will happen, and probably something beyond our comprehension, because it's going to be something new. But anyway, getting back to it. So what Doug said is Tesla. So Tesla just dropped their cars by like 10 grand. Now, I had a friend of mine who just bought a Tesla, and it was fortunate. It was literally like 24 hours they dropped the price when she bought the car. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. You guys got lucked out. But they didn't drop the price because everyone was buying Teslas. They've dropped the price because they're trying to compete and they're growing and they can't do it. So they went from a tech company, because they were being priced as a tech company, they went from being a tech company to a car company. And God forbid, being a car company is going to have you a lower valuation. Every single car company has a much lower valuation than Tesla. People have talked about this for years, and I've mentioned it in the show a bunch in the past. When you're being priced as a tech company and then you become a car company, you're being priced as a car company, which is a hell of a lot lower than a tech company. So Tesla probably should be at these prices. I'm not going to speak to the valuation. I don't want to get myself in trouble with the SEC. But, you know, if you look at a company like Tesla, you had a peak last year and it's come down a lot. I don't know where it's properly valued, but I know that it's probably more likely going to be valued as a car company than a tech company. Now, maybe something happens to change my mind, but at the moment, that's how I would look at it. So I think the thing to think about is the reason we're bringing up deflation now is not because we're going to have deflation tomorrow, but we very well could have it by year end. So I don't want you to be surprised when it happens. You're going to say, oh my God, the world's ending. No, we told you about this. So think about it. Ask questions. Send questions into the show. You know, you're going to have a ton of questions because this is complex stuff. The experts don't even get it right. So the people who are doing their day-to-day and don't have a background in economics, I can't blame you if this stuff confuses you. There's like PhDs and Nobel laureates who don't understand it. Or if they do understand it, they're not giving us the truth of what they're understanding. So just understand this is complex stuff, but we're trying to give you the simple version. We're trying to give you the watered down. Here's what you need to know. Here's the practical application. Here's a handful of practical applications. I'm going to hand over to Doug again. Look for stuff to buy. Have a pile of cash sitting in the sidelines waiting to buy. This is what we've been telling clients for like the past year, year and change, is cash is not a bad thing. We've been telling the listeners here for the past year, cash is king. Cash is not trash. It's king. Good example. I don't need to buy a new car. I want one. And if Carvana went out and dumped their whole inventory in the market and depressed it, and I could get a used car for 50% discount, I'd have a third car. I don't need a third car, but I'd buy it and I'd wait. And I'd wait a little while till the car market sorts itself out. And I'd either sell my other one or sell this one. But the point is, it's kind of hard to pass up good deals. If you have cash, you can do that. If you don't have cash, you can't. So having cash gives you optionality for your life, whether it's a house, whether it's a car, whether it's whatever. I mean, I'll give you another example, quick example, private schools. You know, I send my kids to private school because it's just something I feel strongly about. And I know before COVID, a lot of them were having trouble finding students. It wasn't a thing. And when COVID happened, everyone flipped out because public schools were a disaster. I'm not saying the teachers are great people, but the problem, the teachers' unions, the unions themselves, the system, it was a complete disaster. Private schools couldn't get enough applications. There were so many people applying to private schools because parents were just done with the public school system. They're like, I can't do this. I can't homeschool my kids because the schools are a mess. I'm going to send to private schools. The private schools are great. They took kids in. They were better prepared. No one was really prepared, but they were better prepared. But all of a sudden, you got this big influx, this wave of new applicants. So now they can start raising their prices. Go into recession, people aren't going to be able to afford it. And now they're going to find it hard to find people. So maybe they have to lower their rates. But this is all economics in the global world of economics. And this is how things work. So if you have cash and you feel strongly about private schools and everyone else is like, I can't afford it, and you can, your kid's going to get in. If you couldn't get in before, you have a better chance. So cash is really important in recessions. And I know you're going to lose money to cash in inflation. I know that's going to happen, but you can make it up on the edges. If the markets drop 50%, you've got cash, you can buy in and just wait. At some point, the market will go back and you can make up all of that inflation that you lost and then some by making another 50 to 100% because the market went up. Look at history. Look at examples of when this happened. There are plenty of examples. Even the last 20 years, 2008, 2020, all these examples, look at it and learn that cash is a great thing. And I don't mean have 100% in cash. I mean, have enough cash where you can buy. It would have been great to buy crypto on December 31st and some of this stuff's up like 50, 100% in the first month of the year. I'm not saying that's going to continue, but if you had done that, you would look pretty smart. So just understand the value of things and understand that we're bringing up deflation, not because it's going to happen tomorrow, because it's going to happen in the near future. And if you're surprised by it, it's because you weren't listening to the show. So Doug, give us your kind of final thoughts here and then we can wrap it up.
What you're saying is something we've harped on many, many times, is that people get too caught up in what kind of returns they can make immediately right now. So based off of that, they look and say, you know, I've bought this and I haven't made any money right now, so it must be a bad holding. Patience is a problem in investing. Patience has to be something that if you're going to get into investing, you have to have patience. You have to have what we call an EQ, an emotional quotient about it. Instant returns is something that is driving a lot of the speculation in the market, and it's driven a lot of people, unfortunately, into financial ruin. Just imagine all the people that shifted everything they could. I've heard the horror stories of people taking all their home equity out, people taking and liquidating their 401ks to try to throw all their money into cryptocurrency early to middle of last year and right before it started to decline and lose 50% of value. Now, will it come back? Maybe. But unfortunately, this desire to have and solve all of your financial problems through the greatest return you can get, unfortunately, leads more often than not to financial problems. The key that you have to have is to understand and look for those opportunities. Something that, whether or not he's as successful as he is today, as he used to be, Warren Buffett still has a very good track record of looking for opportunities. Now, don't get me wrong. He also has received certain access that you and I don't get. He gets access to preferred stock. He gets access to discounted stock to bring him in to help a business work. But the only way he's able to take advantage of any of that is his patience to be able to sit there and have liquidity. People have mistaken dollar cost averaging for being able to have the opportunity to truly go in and buy low. And if you buy things low, they're not going to pop in immediately. Sometimes they will. Sometimes if you know something is completely undervalued, but successful and has an opportunity, it may take a long time to recover. One of the best investments you could have had over the past couple of years is Waste Management. You can go back several years to where Waste Management was a dog, a terrible holding. Nobody wanted to be in it because guess what? I don't know about you. Is trash sexy? God, no. But trash became an incredible opportunity for profit, especially when we were all sitting at home and had a lot of waste to get rid of. So here's the thing. If you had the cash to see that Waste Management, which was completely profitable, but had unfortunately not a good stock value anymore, might have been a good buy. But the key comes back to access to capital. Having access to capital, doesn't matter if it's cash, doesn't matter if it's being able to borrow at low rates at the right time against collateral. You've got to be able to have the flexibility and you've got to be patient. If I can stress one thing about what we're talking about here is don't get caught up in the emotions of what you're seeing, of what you're reading, of quick returns leads you to take on more risk than you need to. And being flexible, having that cash or whatever is a good thing in all markets because you never know. I'd like to have a car right now too, Kirk. I'm sick of driving these big long vacations, driving 3,000 miles in a Santa Fe with four kids and two dogs. It's not comfortable. Love to have something like a Lincoln Navigator or Suburban, but I'm not paying for it at these prices. Eventually, they keep putting in these carbon incentives. That Navigator will be worthless and I'll be able to scoop it up for cheap. I don't care how much the gas costs me, but it's going to take some time and I'm going to be patient on that. I know we're going to wrap here. It's on the hour. So thank you for listening. I just give you a little bit talking about inflation. You know, right now we're getting to first quarter. College planning is coming back again as something that is on the top of minds of lots of people as they're looking at inflation and their money. So find more about me and what I do is we help people find money they're losing unknowingly and unnecessarily when it comes to overpaying for major purchases like college. So if what you thought to be true about picking and paying for college turned out to be untrue, when would you want to know? If that is right now, go to procollegeplanners.com. procollegeplanners.com and download our free college planning checklist right now. Key funding data for 2022, 2023. Learn some ways that you right now can help get the cost of college. And remember, it's not the best college you're looking for. It's the best college for your child at the right price. Procollegeplanners.com is a good resource to start for you to begin to shop as a smart and savvy consumer for college, get the price down and learn how to pay for it the right way.
Great. Well, Doug, thanks for joining us on the show. Always appreciate your insights. Yeah, I mean, college is something we're going to be talking certainly a lot more about. But that's the show for this week. Thank you again for joining us, Money Tree Investing Podcast. My name is Kirk Chisholm, Wealth Manager of Innovative Advisory Group. We don't just manage your wealth, we make your life better. You can find more about me at innovativewealth.com. And of course, you can find me every week here on the show. Please subscribe to the podcast and the podcast app of your choosing. You can also check out our show at moneytreepodcast.com. On our website, you'll have access to the show notes, resources, and the archive shows. Also, we're now on YouTube, so please check out our YouTube channel. When you're there, please subscribe and leave a comment. Lastly, please leave a show rating and comment on the podcast app of your choice. Oh, and don't forget, do your own research. This show is for informational use only. We're not telling you what to think, merely how to think about investing. We're also not selling any products or services, so do not consider this advice. If you're having any problems with the show, I blame Putin. Please send some emails and express your feelings to him. Also, as you know, we had problems with LinkedIn, so you can blame LinkedIn as well, because I know it wasn't my fault this week. Anyway, if you're seeking financial advice, talk to an oracle, a fortune teller, or maybe a licensed financial advisor. I'm one, but once again, I'm not selling anything. But I'm easy to find. Have a great week ahead, and remember, no one will care about your money like you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.